There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Welcome to College Football Live, presented by Dr. Pepper.
John Embry, another great young man from Destrehan, Louisiana. Hold on a second.
Hey, guys! Hey! I'm having a press conference, okay? Thank you!
Great young man. On a scrimmage, we wanted to get bigger. I'll stop.
Hey! Stop the ball! Stop the drill! I'm having a press conference! Thank you!
We have to fix the line of scrimmage. Went all the way to Michigan.
Oh, welcome into College Football Live. Hopefully no interruptions in this one. Tom Luganville, Trevor Maddich, Peter Burns. I just can't keep laughing at that one. Props to O for continuing to go, right, Tom? I mean, you just went right into it.
You hear the guy in the background go, that means shut up.
All right, well, I'll tell you what. I'll shut up because we got a lot of stuff to get into. So let me give you right here. It was National Signing Day, so let's go ahead and look at these numbers. Alabama, my goodness. Once Nick Saban says they were going to approach just a little bit differently. Yeah, it worked out, right? A new record, 21 of the top 300 ESPN recruits, and that is your top five. So, Luke, you've been knee-deep in it the whole way. What did we learn about early signing day year two?
That it continues to be a positive movement forward for both parties, the players and the programs. Guys, at the end of the 72-hour period a year ago, 72% of the entire class ended up signing. By 8 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday night, 71% of this class had already signed. So I think where we will be at the end of Friday night when this is concluded is probably closer to the 75% range. And there were very few surprises. And I think having this early signing period, Trevor, is going to lead to fewer and fewer surprises. And that's the way the coaches like it.
Yeah, I think what you need to do is, if you're a player, get signed right now. What you don't want to do is have your preferred team load up on the position that you play because you didn't sign yet. You don't want to be that guy left out.
All right, yeah, you don't want any surprises, but there were some surprises. Trevor, I'll start with you. What made you scratch your head in a good or bad way? Let's start with the good, actually, of the biggest surprise of signing day.
The number one recruit in the nation, Kayvon Thibodeau, defensive lineman from California, signed with Oregon. Now, he was a priority recruit for Alabama, for Clemson, UCLA as well, and bless their hearts, they probably weren't in the running very much. But he signed at Oregon, and that helped to propel Oregon up to number five. The next Pac-12 team is 17, that's Washington. And it only takes one or two impact players in that conference to make a difference because it is so close from a standpoint of talent level.
Yeah, and it's the impact players at the right positions, Trevor, along the defensive front where there's been very thin numbers. I think you could make an argument that Washington's probably done the best job in their defensive line, maybe Utah most recently. But getting a player of this caliber along the defensive front for Jim Levin in that defense to wreak havoc from a pass rush perspective is huge for not only Oregon but for the conference for a player like this to stay on the West Coast.
Luke, who surprised you in a positive way on early signing day?
Without question, it's the Arkansas Razorbacks. I think when you take a look at the on-field performance of Chad Morris in his first year with his football team, relative to the class that he has signed, I think you could make an argument that it's the most impactful group, top to bottom, of anybody in the SEC. And that's not to diminish what Alabama's done, but we're not talking about apples and apples here. What I'm talking about is the course of the season by which most of these, if not close to all of these prospects for Arkansas, were verbally committed throughout the season. And while this season went down a path that was overly negative, all of the players stayed on. They didn't defect. I think Chad Morris, this staff, deserves a lot of credit for what they've been able to do on the recruiting trail after what was a very disappointing season on the field.
Honorable mention, too, I think, to Tennessee, top 20 class, yeah, despite not having an offensive coordinator and not going to a bowl game. Trevor, biggest disappointment on the early signing period?
I think Florida State needs to be in that conversation. Last year, they finished with the 11th-ranked class. This year, they look like they were about there, but they dropped down to 18 so far in this period. Part of the reason that they lost an ESPN 300 commit who flipped to Texas A&M, a defensive lineman. They lost an ESPN 300 commit quarterback who flipped to North Carolina. And right now, Florida State didn't have a quarterback recruited in their entire class last year. And so far in this class, they don't have a quarterback again. So right now, this is kind of an iffy spot for the Seminoles.
I think for me, I'm going to go back out west, and I was surprised at both USC and UCLA's performance, or maybe lack of drama as it related to both of the programs. Now, SC, I think, signed a pretty solid class, but certainly not of the nature that we've expected or become accustomed to a USC type of program signing when it comes to the closing the deal. We'll see what January holds, but it's really UCLA more than anything else. And I admire the process by which Chip Kelly is trying to go about the player evaluation, slowing it down, making sure you're identifying the right guy for you. The problem is I'm not so sure it can be pulled off in this climate. His approach is correct in theory, but when you're competing in this rat race of player identification and offers and getting kids on campus, the caliber of player that UCLA signed in their 15 signees on Wednesday, I don't know if it's to the level that it needs to be for them to contend for a Pac-12 championship.
Might say the same thing about Miami and Mark Richt. Had a lot of decommits right before that early signing period. All right, let's have some fun. Trevor, what's the best new name in college football coming up next year that you saw on early signing day?
Nick Troy Fortune. Two strong first names, Nick, Troy. They're strong by themselves. You put them together and then add the Fortune at the end. There's nothing there but power.
All right, impressive there. Tom Luganville, which name you rolling with?
Steel Chamber.
I knew it. It sounds like a superhero, right?
The Ohio State Buckeye running back out of the womb. Parents got it going on. That is a sick name for Steel Chambers. I love it. Yeah, that is fantastic. That's
right up there with Pierce Quick, the Alabama offensive lineman. Yeah. But I'm going to go with Maverick McIver. I mean, has a guy that's going to commit to Texas Tech ever seen more like a Red Raider than Maverick McIver? Wait, I mean, this is out of an episode of Friday Night Lights, guys.
Can he fly an F-16 and make a bomb out of fishing line and sour cream?
Yes. Duct tape and bailing wire. He will get it done. He actually had committed to Cliff Kingsbury, but after Cliff left Texas Tech, he ended up, of course, staying with Matt Wells. Very impressive. All right, we're talking about something about transferring, right? Because everyone is in the water right now, and now it's coming out that Justin Fields, he's put his name, guys, in this transfer portal. He's looking for a request to get out of Georgia. Ohio State appears to be the front runner. Trevor Maddich, is that the best place for Justin Fields to go, up to Columbus?
It would be a great place to go. Ryan Day is known as a quarterback whisperer. He's a guy that's got college and NFL experience, and Fields has all the raw talent, but he wasn't able to get it out from a standpoint of a pure pocket passer during his true freshman year at Georgia. And I think going to Ohio State will get him out from under Jake Fromm. It'll get him into the wing of Ryan Day, and I think he should be able to flourish there.
Well, he's supremely talented, there's no question. But in all due respect to this entire conversation, until we know whether or not he applies for a waiver and would get the waiver that would allow him to be eligible immediately, as opposed to having to wait an entire year, sit out without having a crystal ball of knowing how programs are going to develop, how can anybody make this determination on what would be the right fit? Yes, are there offensive systems? Are there coaching schemes? Are there areas where you say, oh, that Justin Fields would be a really good fit? Absolutely, but nobody really knows what the future holds until we know whether or not he'd be eligible right away, because that decision may be dramatically different than one that would require him to sit out.
All right, so if he does, I think maybe one of those teams that could look at it, would it be Oklahoma and Lincoln Riley? I mean, my goodness, what, the last 2 years they've taken transfers and turned them into Heisman Trophy winners. Luke, if he is available immediately, is that, how could you not turn down that offer?
Right. You know, listen, I think that is an option with Oklahoma. I think Penn State could be an option. You know, Tommy Stevens has been a backup. He's played in a variety of roles as a Wildcat and as a kind of a tight end, versatile guy. He was originally committed to Penn State. Could that be an option there? And then I also look at programs like an Auburn, where you're going to utilize the quarterback's ability to run and throw and get out of the pocket, do all the things that make Justin Fields special. So I think if you were to be granted immediate eligibility, there are a variety of situations in college football, not just Oklahoma, not just Ohio State, that could be tailored to his skill set.
But he'll pay attention to the roster as well. Oklahoma just signed a 5-star quarterback.
Spencer
Rattler.
He
may end up behind that guy as well. So yep. He's got to look at who he might have to compete with because he doesn't want to transfer again.
Yeah, remember LSU was in on the Justin Fields sweepstakes before he ended up going to Georgia. Something to keep interest into. We got a lot more things to keep you interested here on College Football Live, including bowl blitz, which bowl outside the playoff is the must win, and why they may need walk-ons for the Peach Bowl. Yeah, well, no walk-on's going to be needed for this. Bowl Mania rolls on tonight with the Bad Boy Mowers Gasparilla Bowl in Tampa. Thundering Herd of Marshall battles South Florida. 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app.
College Football Live is presented by Ice Cold Dr. Pepper, the official drink of Fansville. And in part by New York Life. We know that life doesn't fit into any one plan, so start a plan that flexes with yours. Welcome back to College Football Live, presented by Dr. Pepper.
All right, and this week's Wendy's Fresh Look, more bowls coming up on ESPN Thursday and Friday. Thursday, Marshall in South Florida and the Bad Boy Mowers Gasparilla Bowl. And on Friday, we got a doubleheader, FIU in Toledo and the Makers Wanted Bahamas Bowl in Western Michigan and BYU in the famous Idaho Potato Bowl. So let's go four down and let's go a little bowl blitz. All right, Luz, I'm going to start with you. Most intriguing bowl game that we have left on the slate.
I love the Camping World Bowl game between West Virginia and Syracuse because we have a quarterback in Will Grier decided to forego the bowl game, prepare for the draft, which is now going to leave West Virginia likely with Jack Allison, the former University of Miami quarterback, transferred into West Virginia. What we've seen from this type of offense is they've been able to plug and play pretty good. So how does West Virginia respond to Syracuse? I think both teams need this as a positive vibe going into the offseason.
For me, it's the Peach Bowl. Florida against Michigan. Both of these teams had their ups and downs. Both of them are trying to get some traction going into the offseason. Florida is trying to reestablish itself as the premier program in that state. Michigan will have lost two games in a row to finish the season for the second straight year, including a loss to their rival Ohio State, if they lose this bowl game. There's a lot at stake.
Oh, boys, give me Fiesta Bowl because everybody's going to be tuned in to that, right? UCF, they just coming off their national championship parade, 25 games straight. Listen, LSU is pumped. They're ready to play. I was down in Baton Rouge. They can't wait for this game. But now no Ed Alexander. He's not going to play. He's declared for the draft. Kirsten Fulton is not going to play. He's injured. And Greedy Williams has elected not to play. So really intriguing bowl game for me in that one. By the way, first time in 50 years and 50 bowl games, LSU's gone west of the Mississippi to play. All right, most confident that you're going to win this game, that this team's going to win, Luke's. Who you got?
I've got the Pinstripe Bowl. I think the weather, Wisconsin's run game, the state of the Miami program right now, coming off a signing day, the fact that Jaren Williams may be transferring, a bunch of guys from a warm weather climate. It's going to be physical. It's going to get ugly. It's going to be battered and bruised in the trenches. I feel good about Wisconsin.
For me, it's the Citrus Bowl. I think Penn State will handle Kentucky. Kentucky's got some guys going off to the NFL. Kentucky is a team that's in a place that they're not used to being, by the way, quite frankly, because they had such a great year. And Penn State will have Trace McSorley, a quarterback, one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the Big Ten, playing his last game in a Penn State uniform. I think the Nittany Lions will rise up and make it a great send-off for Trace.
Yeah, Jordan Jones ruled ineligible for that game for Kentucky. For me, it's going to be the Sugar Bowl. Give me the Georgia Bulldogs right now facing a Tom Herman Texas squad, who I think is good, but I think with so much young talent that we've seen from the Georgia Bulldogs, they're going to be apt and ready to go. Forget the Justin Field drama or whatever that is. Jake Fromm has been ready to go. Young group, they will be ready for that one. All right, most underrated bowl, Luke. Where are you rolling?
I think it's the Gator Bowl. I think the two teams, NC State and Texas A&M, are very evenly matched. You've got tremendous personnel at the skill spots. Both pride themselves in running the football. And excellent quarterback play between Kellen Mond and Ryan Finley. This game, to me, kind of has a New Year's Six type of feel. And both of these programs, I think, are on the rise and here to stay going forward.
I love the Armed Forces Bowl. Army, Houston. Now, Houston couldn't stop the run even with Ed Oliver in their defensive line, and he's not playing in this game. Army, one of the best running games in the country. The thing about Army, though, is normally you think about low scores because they take long, grinding drives. Because Houston can't stop the run, Army will break out and have fast-scoring drives. It'll be really bizarre for Army. But at the same time, Army's defense, I don't think, can handle the offense of Houston, even with Derek King out. So I think this will be a very high-scoring game.
I'm looking forward to a high-scoring game in this one. It's the Alamo Bowl. Listen, I'm from San Antonio. I love the 210. We always seem to have wacky games in that. We get Gardner Minshew. We get a mustache. Mike Leach probably going to hang out at the Alamo Bowl or Alamo at some point. I'm looking forward to it. And, yes, unfortunately, it'll be Dave Pasch, Greg McElroy, and Tom Luganville on the call. That's the only thing that brings down the Alamo Bowl. Got to be honest with you. All right.
Where do you see the luncheon I've got to attend?
I can't wait. Trust me.
Let me get steak.
Yeah, when we're talking who needs a bowl game the most here on fourth down, Lugs, who has to have this one?
Auburn. I think Auburn just needs something good to happen to them off of the year that they had, the expectations coming into the season, going into the offseason, going to have to answer some questions at quarterback. They've had a tumultuous story in regards to Gus Malzahn and the staff. And, oh, by the way, Purdue's pretty darn good and all the pressure's on Auburn.
You know, Tom, I think that storyline is going around because I think Miami, for the same reason, came in with such a huge expectations. They were a top 10 team to open the season, and they just fell right away and just left the national conversation. Yeah. They need a good send-off into the offseason with a win in the Pinstripe Bowl.
Give me the Red Box Bowl, gentlemen. And actually, it's for both teams, right? Michigan State, they finished the season just atrociously bad on offense, losing their last, two of the last three. But Oregon, so much positive momentum right now. They won three of their last four games. Mario Cristobal has this monster recruiting class we just talked about. There is momentum of winning your bowl game. Remember last year? 1-8. That's the Pac-12's record. Oregon needs that win as much as anyone. And luckily, Tom Luganville is not on that call, so I will go ahead and actually watch that one. All right, we have a lot more coming up, including, Luke's. Listen, I love y'all equally. Let's take a look at our Progressive Bowl Challenge Cup. Ohio routed San Diego State in the DXL Frisco Bowl to give the MAC its first win of the bowl season on Wednesday night. Despite San Diego State's loss, the Mountain West is one of the two conferences with a pair of bowl wins already so far, joining the Sun Belt. All right, coming up, two teams wasn't enough, so then we went to four. And now are some saying four's not enough? Should we go to eight? We'll talk playoff expansion next. Can't wait for this. Saturday, December 29th, ESPN College Football Playoff Semis. That's right, we kick things off. Clemson, Notre Dame, Goodyear Cotton Bowl Classic, 4 p.m. Eastern. Then it's Bama versus the Heisman Trophy winner, Kyler Murray's Oklahoma Sooners in the Capital One Orange Bowl. Both games live on ESPN app, so you can watch them anywhere.
College Football Live is presented by Ice Cold Dr. Pepper, the official drink of Fansville, and in part by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. College Football Live is brought to you by Wells Fargo, helping more families share holiday meals.
Indeed, they are. Wells Fargo teaming up with Feeding America in Fort Worth, featuring a food bank challenge. Two teams in the Armed Forces Bowl, Army and Houston, competing to see who can fill the most food bags that will be headed to needy families around the holidays. Great work there from the Wells Fargo Food Bank. All right, as we continue College Football Live, this quote got a lot of people talking. Big Ten would be happy to discuss structure issues with colleagues. It's probably a good idea, given all the conversations and noise around the issue, to have discussions with our colleagues. The Big Ten would definitely have conversations. That from Big Ten Commissioner Jim Delaney. Trevor Maddich, do you like four, or is this comment right here moving us closer to eight?
I think that comment is more to tell the fans that we're listening to you, but we're not going to do anything about it. I don't think they will go to eight, but I think they should go to eight. And to me, it's not about access. To me, it's about the integrity and value of conference championship races. When you've got a three-loss Washington that can't be in the playoff, even though they're Pac-12 champion, what it does is takes away the excitement of the postseason as a national thing from the Pac-12 and from other conferences whose champions might end up with a couple, three losses and they're out. I think that you give up something. There's a price to pay. And if you have conference champions not being relevant on the national stage, then I think that diminishes them. I think that's a greater price to pay than to have a two or three loss champion make an 18 playoff.
You know, as with everything, particularly this issue, the devil is in the details. And how do you manage everything? Because the one area in this whole discussion where the College Football Playoff Committee has truly dug their heels in is by not having mandates. Best four teams. So to have this discussion and drive it forward, if you start placing mandates, whether it's inclusion of a group of five team, whether it's the conference champion of the Power Five programs, are you then ensuring you're getting the best teams? And
so
that's
what?
Where the discussion comes into play.
But the best team doesn't always go on to win the Super Bowl either.
Right.
You know,
I understand.
But guys,